I think it captured the whole sort of area of the mountain. It was difficult to start with, but I enjoyed it towards the end. It just brought it all together, and I think you could use that film to depict what that mountain is all about. It's about the plants as individual plants in a whole mixture of scenes coming together, and how difficult that terrain is. And I enjoyed the whole experience. And it, to me, it got better as time got on throughout the run.
It was quite interesting that bit near the beginning in the documentary of the sheep, as in Miranda, in that great big space, because that's pretty much the stocking route we have now on a lot of these areas. Is, you know, you used to talk about hectares per sheep, but now it's tens of hundreds.
It shows how sparse that land is.
Yeah, and it's how it's changed. You've got wind farm and the odd sheep.
Now. Yeah.
And that's all.
And the scale of it as well.
Yeah.
And also a lonely life for a sheep.
Yeah.
Because they're on their own in the middle of sort of natural plants, really. So.
Yeah, they're kind of in the stocking routes now. They're not part of a flock anymore, are they? They're just.
And it's been becoming more difficult to farm as well, to gather those sheep, because there's only one here and there. Whereas they'd follow each other off that mountain in the past. It's just one or two over that vast area.
They used to have their home ranges, didn't they? Whereas now they're sort of losing that ability.
Go much further afield.
Yeah, they'll just wander into the next heft's home because they're not sort of tied. They're not. There's not the mass to make them nesters.
So they don't flock at all.
Well, they still flock, but they don't.
I think it's still a difficulty now as well, whereas they used to develop their own sort of paths and they'd follow them. So each sheep would follow the same path and they'd graze over a whole area. Whereas now they become insular within the area. They graze very hard in some areas rather than moving across the area. So they've become sort of stuck to a small patch. And it's having an effect on the vegetation in those areas.
But at the top sections, it kind of shows how thick vegetation is, and that it's not easy for them to pass through. And there aren't distinct paths, sort of up on the peat bog areas. And
the only thing I didn't really get was the weather differences up there, because the weather up there is like, it looked all right up there.
Yeah.
But actually, like, I mean, when we were there, it's like 1 minute it's fine, 10 minutes later you're in the middle of a snow blizzard, like freezing your hands off, and you're like, having to race back to the
You get the idea of sort of the difference in vegetation and the difference in thickness and what's there, but it doesn't give off the dynamic of the rest of the environment in terms of the weather and the conditions.
You could hear the wind in some
in some of them,
and you could also see the mist in the far distance, but some days you go up there and you just can't see your hand.
You can't see a metre in front of you at times.
Because that was the interesting thing, because the clips were changing quickly, so it was kind of like quite fast-paced, which you associate with quite a slow landscape, isn't it? In some ways, it's...
But when you look at it up there, so a whole view of the whole of the landscape with just Miranda there, it all looks very much the same when you look at it in the bigger picture, and you just see endless amounts of millennia, really. But if you take her footage from that spot on her individual GoPros, then you actually get an idea of what's below that millennia, and that there is more, and it's more diverse.
And also,
which you can't see in that big picture, but
in that vastness, it's each and every little plant makes that sort of environment, basically. It's whether it is millennial, whether it is soft rushes, they intermingle, and then you've got a bit of heather amongst them. But it gives you a colour, a theme for each and every one of the areas, which is difficult to depict sometimes. And I think in this particular bit of film, you can see those individual little plants, which is what the sheep sees, and what they do for a living is to try and nibble some of those to have enough to sustain them. they live on it.
I think the film really shows the 3D nature of the pasture as well, because if we look at an image like that, all we're seeing is the top cover, so it tends to be the tallest plants, like you say, it's the moon or the top of the head or whatever. Actually, down through, there's lots of things that just never reach the surface.
Yeah, and it's actually more diverse than what you're seeing as a whole picture.
Yeah.
It kind of gives another level to it.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is the sheep level.
Mm.
And also, when you look from the top and across, it looks very brown.
Mm.
But when you look down on a GoPro, it's very green.
It is, green. Yeah. Yeah.
They're all living little plants that are in that environment.
No, that was one thing that I kept thinking of, how green the vegetation looked.
Mm.
And the heather, really purple. I mean, I know we're used to seeing patches of heather on top of the surface, but it just seemed to sort of stand out more in the individual GoPro footage.
That's really striking image, that one. Just one little sheep and such a big area.
And when we do travel people through these areas, they don't really understand the vastness of Mid Wales and the Cambrian Mountains and what it has to offer, because it's not walked that much anyway.
No, so. I mean, that whole huge plateau is all essentially out of sight. It's not until you go up there you realise it is there.
But if you were to show someone just this landscape footage, they'd think it was complete, you know, barren and bare, and probably didn't have an important role as an environment to look at it, because, like you say, it is just brown and a vast landscape. But
you do get the impression there's a lot of dead vegetation there, which kind of does tell you that there's not a lot happening.
But then when you get below and you realise that it's, you know, you've got all the peat bogs underneath and the different species and obviously the water,
I think
you really start to learn the different sort of aspects of the environment as a habitat.
And there's man's intervention as well. There are all ruins along that people have lived, gone quietly, left the area, but the ruins are still there, and there's something quite exciting about those. When you pass them, people have lived in those for centuries, and then the whole dynamics has changed, and there's nobody living on those upper hills. The sheep don't look much different now to what they were sort of 50 years ago. It's typical Welsh mountain sort of mountain sheep that can live in those harsh conditions.
There was a fence post there, and there was a little bit of film earlier of Miranda going over a falling down fence, and it's a bit like the old houses. Without any maintenance, these things just gradually disappear. Nature takes back. Mm. We can have an influence. The wind turbines look shiny and new from a distance, but up close, even they're all covered in things.
Yeah, that's it. Like, throughout the landscape, you've got sort of the old history to it, like these old buildings that have been left and abandoned, but then you've got the new modern age of using the mountains with wind turbines and renewable energy.
Yeah, man's intervention is short periods of time in real terms compared to the nature of the landscape that's existed for many, many centuries in the same form. I think if the crawling was happening 100 years ago, it wouldn't be much different. Although probably the vegetation would probably be less of it. It would have been grazed a lot closer then than it is now. But it's management or no management. It depends what people want. If it's not managed, it will change. There's a surprising amount of heather, and there's really nice colours on those heather. It was captured at the right time of the year when it was in flower.
There's such an obvious difference between some of the greener grasses there and the other bits. You can see that. I mean, those are the bits the sheep will go for.
That's
They'll pick out those patches because they're more nutritious for them.
And there was even a clear difference in looking at the water quality, because I think it was in Crawl 4, you could see all the moss and it was quite clear water, but then further down, when you go into these rushes, it was all quite brown, peaty, mucky water. Just shows the difference that the vegetation type has on it.
And water plays such a big part in that environment. It's high rainfall, and it obviously sort of has a changing in water. It purifies the water as it travels down. A lot of people don't understand that. It's due,
and people won't know about that. That's what I'm saying. Like, someone to look at that habitat will think nothing of it. But when you get down to the finer points and you realise, like Miranda says in it, about the carbon capture and purifying, cleaning the water, it's all down to the different habitats that you have from the top of the mountain right down through to the bottom.
I think as well, about the crawl through really showed how much water is there, because if you're just driving by, you would see the odd pool and maybe some streams, but the water table is just below the surface of the vegetation, and just putting hands and knees down, you can see the water splashing up.
And if anything, it's probably easier to crawl across those surfaces than to walk across them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe the crawling aspect of it shows that actually, you know, livestock like sheep, they are well adapted to these environments for just getting across the landscape and through the thick vegetation as well.
And they also use that vegetation for shelter during the harsh weather, because they're shorter. And they can lie behind rushes and can have some shelter from the harshness of the weather.
In some ways, the vegetation is, because it is so dense, they don't move a lot anyway. So just generally, you know, as you said, you'll keep within their own patch.
Well, this is all hefting again, and those sheep are born and bred into an area under natural circumstances, and they develop an instinct to live in those areas. When they go away on tack, they'll come back and they'll still remain within those areas, but the quality of the pasture must be good enough to sustain them for a whole year, because once they come back as yearling sheep, they will remain on those mountains for the rest of their life until they are removed for culling.
That was more typical weather.
Yeah,
it's
a
murky
Yeah. It's funny though, because we call that like bare, you call it fairly bare habitat, wouldn't you? But in terms of, just because there's not much there and it looks like dead, but actually for them, because they're so low down and it goes halfway up there, for them it's like, it's not really bare at all, is it?
No, and I think looking at this footage, even as someone who works up there, you tend to sort of get used to seeing that environment and not think about the whole picture is all this sort of diverse vegetation that's there. So it's quite a nice, unique, fresh look on it to be like, actually, there is more below all these tall grasses.
Yeah, and it's individual sheep and individual plants that, you know, it comes back quite clearly. You know, there's a clump of rushes.
Yeah, those clumps there are ideal to sort of shelter behind, whatever way the wind's blowing.
But again, even in those areas, you have other biodiversity, you have a bit of fluke in them, you have other sort of
waving
things.
Tick.
Yeah, very much. It's ideal ground for ticks as well. So there are other things that will live and survive in that harsh environment. It's not just sheep.
And it's these patches where you've got shorter patches and longer areas together that's what helps make a good habitat. You've got feeding sites and shelter sites for birds as well.
Yeah.
Different plants, different structures, long and short, all encourages different types of insect, which is food for different kinds of birds. So often if you're trying to get a rare bird into an area, it's actually about managing the insects rather than just the bird.
And quite rightly too, those areas with shorter grass has happened because of the management of sheep actually grazing amongst the rushes. It is a management technique that helps with ground laying birds.
It's the same thing in half of it, when you've got like the rushes and stuff, you'll see canopy structure, you've got the understory and things like that. But then when you get into a moss side, it is just, because the moss is so dense, it is generally just moss in a patch, isn't it?
But this, to me, just based on the video footage, I'd interpret it as, in terms of plant species, looking a little less diverse than what's at the top. But is that because this land is managed with sheep grazing and just, it definitely looks...
You're probably not seeing as much of the variation because the sheep have actually grazed in those areas.
Yeah.
The underlying sort of different types of plants are there, but they are grazed during the year, and that's the whole point of it. If you're keeping sheep, that you're not getting too much of the vegetation that's of no use to an animal to graze on.
Depends quite a lot on what type of soil is underneath and on how wet the ground is as well. There's, in certain areas, only a few different types of plant will grow well, whereas in other areas, there's more things will grow and you tend to get more diversity.
Yeah, it's about sky. I'm even not getting off to see up there.
The sky's in sunshine. Definitely pick the nicer days for crawling.
Actually, not the kind of the 3 feet of snow. And...
the sheep probably appreciate the sun even more than we do. They can't just go back to the pickup and drive down the hill.
Well, no, I mean, the funny thing is, on a day like that, you're probably more likely to find them just sort of, you know...
They get up and sort of bounce around, and they're happier sheep. You know, we've had a poor winter where the wet gets to the sheep like man as well, so it's a difficult, harsh environment that they have to live in, but they're far happier if their backs are dry and their feet are dry as well, rather than walking through peat bogland.
It's hard work. Wet jumpers on.
Do you think sheep get depressed?
I really think they do.
Yeah.
You can see the sheep.
You can tell because their ears sort of droop down a bit more, don't they, when it's their last will and testament.
They don't. Because they move out in the middle, and they sit down, they lie down, and they do whatever you want to. They just shut down.
Yeah.
And you try and lift them up, and they will literally just...
Yeah.
They'll just refuse to get up.
Lost the will to live.
I have read things about sheep being happier in more diverse environments. Or even sort of slightly brighter as well, because they're actually having to use their brains, compared to being in like a boring flat field. But everything's the same, and they don't really have to think about it. You put them on a hill where they've got a bit of diversity, a few different things to look at, and it seems to make them happier.
It depends. Depends where they've been brought up. If you put a group of lowland sheep that come from that kind of environment,
and put them on a hill,
they just stand in the middle of the field, blinking.
Yeah.
Where are we?
I think they like the environment, and we've developed sheep for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
There's no point putting a Suffolk or a Texel to try and live in that environment. Yeah. And obviously a mountain sheep likes to sort of travel a long way, whereas your down sheep, your big fat sheep, don't like to travel a long way. They just sit and eat, basically. So.
I suppose it depends what they feel safe in, isn't it? Just if you're a lowland sheep going to an upland environment, it's a bit of a, in terms of understanding threats, it's a different ballgame, isn't it? So.
It's also what to do with the vegetation, because there's been some nice research showing how important it is learning what to do from your mum. So lambs follow the ewe along and learn what to nibble and not to nibble. So if they've grown up on simple pastures in the lowlands, they just don't know what to make of the vegetation. So.
Or where to walk.
Yeah, lots of nurture in how to be a mountain sheep, as well as nature.
Yeah, bringing sheep from outside the area takes a long time for them to learn about their environment and how they sustain themselves. And that's why, over centuries, they've hefted sheep into these areas so they understand their environment. And you can cross these sheep and you have this sort of... inbred in them, that they understand the environment they want to live in. And you've got open hills from Pwllheli right over to Rhaiadr, but the sheep don't move right across that area. They will stay within half a mile of where they've been born, basically, and that's what hefting is all about, which we lost a lot of that during the foot and mouth outbreak back in 2001, and it takes a long, long time to put it back together.
So, in a way, this video review, because it was a 10-mile walk, it's almost more likely to have been walks across different hefts than typical, what a typical sheep would walk.
Yeah, I think there were three sort of main areas. One is semi-improved right at the top, where there's been very little intervention from man in actually ploughing or draining or anything of that nature. Then you've got the middle land that's been improved slightly with more fencing, and then you come to the areas closer to Pwllheli, which has been improved, that has been ploughed. The fields are smaller, so you are enclosing your sheep into a smaller area. And this is where you find your different quality and type of sheep that will live right across that sort of landscape. The challenge of very high ground looks for a smaller, tough little sheep, whereas the better ground, as you go down into the valley, you're looking for a bigger sort of carcass that will be a meat sheep rather than a breeding sheep.
But across the UK, there's been a big change in the number of the different types. So the number of hill sheep has declined dramatically, and there's more and more people putting a cross, so it's a hill type cross, something else, higher up the hill, not on the top, where we're losing sheep completely, it seems. And part of that's market requirements, because where is the market for little mountain lambs these days? The supermarkets want something that's bigger, a different conformation, and those are the ones paying the money now.
But to retain that biodiversity on the high hill, you still need a grazing animal. Whereas if you haven't got a grazing animal, you will see in some of these pictures with Molinia, which is a dominant species of indigenous grass that takes over from all the other sort of species of vegetation that's up there. And obviously it's no good for habitat for birds or anything else. So we need to keep that balance. We need to have grazing animals. In some cases, we need to have cattle on those hills as well, which we haven't discussed much today, but they graze slightly different to how sheep graze, so that you do have that development of biodiversity into the area. But not grazing at all reduces the amount of biodiversity and animals and birds that want to live in that environment.
Because, of course, some would argue that you should have animals at all.
Yeah, that argument is there to see. But the problem you have with that is that tourism is affected as well, because you have anecdotal evidence of people now not being able to walk on mountain paths because they're not kept open by sheep.
It depends a lot on what we're starting from. To lots of areas, foot and mouth, and the loss of animals actually led to improvements in biodiversity, because overgrazing was such a problem. But in Wales, you're more likely to get just dominance by one or two plant species if you don't manage the situation. It's a problem. One set of recommendations isn't going to work everywhere.
I can imagine. I think there's a bit of an idea as well, isn't it, that we take sheep away and that trees will sort of magically appear. But in areas like this, up in the uplands, it's not necessarily true, is it?
It might be hundreds of years before. No matter what you want, you really need to manage to get it. It's not going to happen by accident.
And the best thing is kind of a diversity of different things, isn't
Northern
it? Different
Wales. Types of...
different types of habitats. The more different types of habitats you have, the more variety of wildlife you're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're better to have the mixture.
Look how clean
I think these
the
bits are great, yeah. Saying like the clarity of the water And the amount of water as well, it just shows...
There's no compaction there.
But I think as a video as a whole, so when we're trying to introduce the site in the area to new people or telling people about us as a team and a research, we always look at it as potential for research, what can be done, what we're doing, but this gives a whole different, sort of very unique overlook of the whole area.
You can see the Alanith in the background, can't you?
Mm.
It's the, what is it? It's Triplice, the one of large Triplices.
The Triplice, yeah, it's a special area of conservation. Right. So it's 8,500 hectares just immediately next door.
Well, that's part of, because Eland Valley's 80,000 in total, isn't it? So even that's only one tenth of the actual over the site.
But it's such an important area because the water captured there finds its way 80 miles away to Birmingham, and it's basically most of the water that they consume in Birmingham and in those urban areas is collected in this area. And that's why it's so important that urban people understand how we look after this environment so that they can receive clean water every day of their life.
But that's the trouble. Most people don't know really where their water originates from and that it originates from up here. And by maintaining and conserving these habitats and keeping and restoring the peat bogs, obviously helping to purify and clean the water, will help reduce water treatment costs further down the line for people in, say, Birmingham and wherever to have clean water coming out of their taps.
And what we...
I'm going back to Birmingham.
This isn't helping us get broadband.
Yeah, that's the problem, isn't it?
Scary. Open reach engineers.
Yeah.
And what we take for granted in the UK, that everybody can have clean water every day, is basically due to the way we manage our hills, whether it's in the Cambrian Mountains or whether it's in Cumbria or whether it's on the hills in Scotland. Urban areas depend totally on hills to have the provision.
It's an interesting point, though, because we say it cleans the water. So the water doesn't, in these upland areas, that's where the water first starts, because it's where it falls as rainfall, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you're not cleaning sediment out of it, you might be cleaning acidity, but you're not cleaning anything more.
Well, no, because if you think from the water originating and starting at the top and it all makes its way down,
yeah, but
like the River Severn originates
top, at the Penygarn is the highest point.
Yeah.
So all of that, there is no point before that. The water is coming down as rain. So it's not cleaning sediment out of it from there.
No.
It's not so much it's cleaning, but it's just that it's not adding sediment into the water.
Yeah, there's a big role there in terms of land use and what happens to the water. But it's things like the sphagnum that are so important in terms of both keeping the water there and you say, keeping the particulates up,
yeah,
the peat up in the hill where you want it to
be. Because I think that's
the
biggest misconception is because people say, oh, it cleans the water. But I don't think it's so much it cleans it, it's just that it stops the sediment from getting into it, doesn't it?
Yeah, although there's more interest in using some of these combinations of plants further down, whether it's maybe passed through more managed agricultural landscapes and it might have picked up.
It's like a lowland bog.
Yeah, exactly, lowland bogs.
So something like Coors Carron or something like that, or Coors Rothman, you could argue, oh, actually, that will be cleaning.
Yeah. But the way the weather is predicted to change, we're not expected to have much more total rainfall, but all the models suggest much more variable rainfall, so we'll have dry periods and extreme weather events, and this is where these areas are going to come into their own. So acting as sponges to keep the rainwater up in the hills and out of people's front gardens and lounges downstream, But then at the same time, holding on to it, releasing it slowly when it's dry, mm-hmm. to keep a steady supply.